Good morning. It's time to get started for our Bible class this morning. Going to be, for the most of class, studying Genesis chapter 10 and 11. I didn't quite get done with chapter 9, so we're going to spend a little bit of time, maybe five or so slides, finishing a story up with Noah before we get into this. But pretty much you see on here, at least the plan for today, will be to finish lesson 6. Then we're going to get into the descendants of Noah's sons, story of the Tower of Babel, and the scattering of the people. So going back to chapter 9 a little bit, so we discussed how bad the situation was on the earth. God decides to destroy every living thing from the earth, saving Noah and his wife, his three sons and their wives, and also the living creatures that we discussed last week. Discussed a little bit about the clean and unclean and how many of those. And then after that, we finished up talking about a few of the laws that God gave that's recorded in chapter 9. And in verse 8 through 17, specifically verse 11, he starts talking about how he's not going to destroy mankind again by the same method that he just did by water. He says in verse 11, "Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And then he says down in verse 13, "I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth." So God makes this covenant with all creation, and it's something that we see pretty much every time there's a breaking of the rain and the sun comes through, something that to this day is a beautiful symbol to us, but it's supposed to be a reminder of what God said back in Genesis chapter 9. Now what he did say going over to the New Testament later, although he said that he would not destroy the earth by flood again, 2 Peter 3 and verse 10, he said, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat, both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up." Okay, let's get to this story that's at the end of chapter 9 and verse 20 through 27 very quickly, where Noah curses Ham's descendants, specifically Canaan. So I won't read all these verses. Hopefully you read some of this at home last week. But just as a reminder, kind of the story, it says Noah planted a vineyard. So if you want to follow along, you can kind of skim through chapter 9, 20 through 27. He plants a vineyard. It says Noah gets intoxicated from the wine that he made and is found naked in his tent by his son Ham. It's discussed down in verse 21 and 22. Ham goes out and tells his two brothers what he saw and what happened. And it seems, I guess more than seems, maybe that's not strong enough, he handled this situation incorrectly and disrespectfully. He entered a private area of his father without permission and saw his father's nakedness. I wanted to bring up as part of this right here, because it really focuses, and it may be confusing to us a little bit, why it focuses so much on Ham, you know, why this and why that. We're only told what we're told. But one thing that we can get out of this story before we move on, that's told already, is it shows, which we already know this, no mankind is perfect, and Noah wasn't either. Although he pleased God, he walked with God, he was one of the only men that was saved on the earth. He wasn't perfect, and this story kind of shows us that, lest we put Noah on too much of a pedestal on the same level of Jesus or of God. You know, he makes mistakes too. And so this is recorded that he made this mistake, but then it focuses on the disrespect of his son and coming in there and seeing his father's nakedness. And I guess not knowing anything else about the story, it would lead us to speculation about some things, but there's no telling what he did or what he said to his brothers and if that was part of the deal, but it focuses on him going in that area and seeing his father's nakedness. So going on, it says down in verse 23, talks about Shem and Japheth come up with a plan on how they're going to cover up their father's nakedness. And so they decide to take a garment and go in there and walk backwards and lay and lay that garment on the over their father so that they cover him. And then eventually Noah wakes up and he knows what had happened. So Noah curses Canaan, who's the son of Ham. He goes off for a few verses there talking about how he's going to be a servant. He says, may his descendants be servants to the descendants of Shem and Japheth. And we're going to get to these descendants and kind of how, after the scattering of the people today, how they move across all the lands and everything. But don't forget this part of the story that's specifically talking about Canaan and how it says that he's going to be a servant to the peoples of Shem and Japheth. Okay, this next excerpt that you see on the screen is from the Bob Waldron book, and I thought he said it pretty good, so I just wrote it all in there, what he said. He said, Canaan's descendants made their home in the little strip of land that we know as the land of Canaan that God ultimately promised to the descendants of Abraham, who were the descendants of Shem. And indeed, Abraham's descendants, the Israelites, took the land of Canaan with God's help and made the remaining Canaanites their slaves. So we can see what was said back in Noah in chapter 9. We know this story very well. We know as we get into, the Joshua and Judges and all those stories from there, we know that this comes to fruition later. Then it just finishes up talking about Noah. Says he lives to be 950 years old, and he's pretty much the last recorded man to live over that lifespan. And we're going to get to a little bit later in the lesson today of how the lifespan starts greatly reducing, not only after the flood, but specifically after the scattering of the people. You start seeing a major difference in how long man is allowed to live. So some of the lessons, and this is going back to 6, 7, 8, and 9, that whole lesson from last week or from Wednesday. One of the lessons that we talk about in here, and if we don't have anybody that plans on getting married later, if we're past that point with everybody in here, so take this as a lesson if you may get married later and you're planning on to, but for most of us that's out here that's older and has already chosen your companion for life, There are some lessons, and there's some lessons even as parents that we can help our children or our grandchildren when you're counseling them on choosing a spouse. I mean, it matters who you choose. These are from Wayne's points where he was teaching a young class, but I think very good points here. For the guys, she will affect your future more than anyone can ever get you to understand. And for the ladies, he'll be the father of your children, the most precious on earth to you. So It's a lifelong decision. It's a decision that's going to help people make it to heaven or not make it to heaven based on those decisions. We can learn that lesson looking back where men were choosing spouses with no regard to if they had any knowledge of God or not. They were choosing them based on how they looked alone. And the end of that decision was what we just studied last week, which was the destruction of mankind. So it's very critical. Going on our theme of faith and failings and families, on the faith side of things, you have Noah's obedience to all things God commanded, and then also Noah's family submitting to God and also to Noah and what was being said. They had free will. They could have turned their backs, but they show faith in what God had said, and their lives are saved for that reason. And then some of the failings that are brought up, I mean, it's all of mankind. Everyone that pretty much that wasn't saved. Now, there could be some speculation and some discussions that aren't that fruitful about who died before the flood and that sort of thing that lived long lives that actually did have care for God. And we can't really solve all those mysteries. But what we know about is what God said about mankind, which was every thought was evil. And so he destroys them. So the failing was mankind in general had turned their backs on God. And then that story we just read, Noah's drunkenness in there shows that he's not a perfect person. He didn't do what he was supposed to do there. And then going on from that, the disrespect of his son Ham and entering in and seeing his father's nakedness. Then what about us? Do we stand up for God in the evil world that we have today? There's a lot of evil out there. Do we still stand up even though we're the minority? And make sure people know that we're a Christian and we care about what God wants us to do. Does persecution hold us back from doing right?
and how do we handle mistakes? It's very easy as we're going through these stories in the book of Genesis to get all over Noah and his drunkenness there, or to get on anybody else. And the deal is, that's not really the main point of studying this. The main point is for us to realize that we need to be more watchful and not let our feet walk in a direction that's going to get us into trouble by disobeying God. Do we make excuses, or do we repent and make it better? All right, are there any comments or questions on Genesis 6, 7, 8, or 9 from anybody? Okay, let's go on and get into Genesis 10 and 11. I do want to make the point before we get too much. Chapter 10 is one of those books that at least most people don't like just reading in detail, because it's a lot of names and descendants. But as we've discussed in the last couple of weeks, this is important. A lot of this is how it's tracked, that Jesus comes through a specific line. And so these generations and peoples are very important. And also, chapter 10 is talking about the descendants of Noah's sons, and some of that is before the Tower of Babel that happens, and then some of it is after, and we'll make some notes about where that fell and between what person that happened. But really, just all these generations are given in chapter 10. Then chapter 11 gets into a specific story, which actually is in the, you know, in the middle of some of the men that were born that are discussed in chapter 10. So that's what we have to try to get to. So starting in Genesis chapter 10, if you want to follow along, it says in verse 1, "Now this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And sons were born of them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Riptha," didn't say that very well, "and Togarmah." I didn't say any of those very well. I put some of these in yellow, not because they're more important than any others. I kind of put some of these out because when we get to other charts, you'll see some of these countries and lands that came from them that we are well aware of. So I kind of pulled some of that out. Moving on to verse 4 and 5, "The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. From these, the coastland peoples of the Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, and to their nations." So let's start by what was discussed there. Let's separate these by the descendants of each son. So let's start by the nations that came through Japheth. Japheth's descendants, after the scattering that we'll see later, and we'll discuss how we know that, but after the scattering, when they move out to from the area they're in, they move north, east, and west. And I said, see the map in red. So we'll kind of go there and then come back. You can kind of see about where, after the scattering happens, that we'll discuss in chapter 11. Just like I said on that other chart, you see that Japheth, kind of northern, western, eastern, on the map there. And we'll get to some of the others in a minute. Look at some of these nations that we recognize today that came from the descendants of Japheth. You have through Javan, the Greeks, the Italians, the Spanish. We have that verse talking about Tarshish. Cyprus, which was, I had highlighted, Kittim. Medes, which was Madai. The Persians, the Parthians, and it's described as the Gentile nations. All this I pulled from the Waldron book. So you see all those nations right there. Again, that's all that area in red on the map that you see there. Now let's get into the descendants of Ham. Verse 6, "The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Rama, and Sabtacha. And the sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan." Continuing with verse 8, "Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calna in the land of Shinar." That's important to our story today. We'll get to that in a few moments. "From that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Ur, Kala,
and Rezin between Nineveh and Kala, that is the principal city. So it gives a little bit of story that one man kind of rose up out of Ham's descendants that was maybe a little bit more stronger and a little more ambitious than maybe some of the others around there. And he actually starts building a lot of cities, and it describes him as a mighty hunter. But on the descendants, let's just stick to that story right now in the areas. Going down to verse 13, Mizraim begot Ludim, Anamim, Leabim, Naphtatuim, Pathrusim, and Casluhim, from whom came the Philistines, and Kaphtorim. So you see, there's the Philistines, that is an area that we know a lot. And some of you that study maps or been over there, some of these areas may be more familiar to you too. Verse 15, Canaan begat Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, the Arkite, and the Senite, the Arvadite, the Zemarite, and the Hamathite. Afterward, the families of the Canaanites were dispersed, and the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon as you go towards Gerar as far as Gaza. So again, you know, a lot of these places ought to be familiar to us. Then as you go towards Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboam as far as Lasha. These were the sons of Ham according to their families, according to their languages, in their lands, and in their nations. And again, we haven't dispersed yet. That's coming up in chapter 11. So Ham's descendants, again, after the scattering, moved mostly to the east coast of the Mediterranean Sea, to land of Canaan as we know it, and Africa. See the map in green. So that's all that area right there. You can see kind of where we know northern Africa and pushing down Egypt, Libya, those areas that we know today, all that in green, including the land of Canaan. You see another piece in southern Arabia. So that's where they were. Here's some of those nations that descended from Ham. The Ethiopians, which is Cush, Egyptians, which was Mizraim, the Libyans, and then the Canaanites. A lot of these we remember from the studies of Joshua and Judges. The Sidonians, the Hittites, which were described as being from Heth, Jebusites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hivites, and also southern Arabia, early Babylonians, and the Philistines. So quite a bit of nations that descended down through Ham. And again, that's about where they moved out from after the scattering, was what is shown as green on that map. And then the descendants of Shem. This is Genesis 10, 21 through 32. It says, and children were born also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth the elder. The sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz, Hul, Gether, and Mash. Arphaxad begat Salah, and Salah begat Eber. And some of those are in green, are just the lines that we'll get to later that are in the line of Shem through eventually to Abraham or Abram. Verse 25, to Eber were born two sons. So it's kind of interesting. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. So that's his name, kind of means division. And that's talking about when the peoples were divided, what we're going to get into in chapter 11. So it's in his days. So now we know, going through the descendants, about when that was. And it says, and his brother's name was Joktan. Joktan begat Almodad, Shelef, Hazar Mavith, Jera, Hadaram, Uzzel, Dikla, Obal, Abimiel, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were sons of Joktan, and their dwelling place was from Mesha as you go towards Sepher, the mountain of the east. So let's just give a little bit, break a little bit out about the sons of Eber. So Peleg and Joktan. Peleg means division. So all people were divided in his days, we're told in verse 25. All families were in the same area prior to this time. That's kind of important to the story. We'll get to that a little bit later. But as they got out of the ark and started moving down, they kind of end up down in the same area. And that's what gets them into trouble that we'll talk to a little bit later. But through Peleg, Abraham and his descendants come through him, and eventually Jesus. Joktan is pretty much where the Arabian families and their descendants come from. So you kind of got like the Israelites and the Arabic nations come from these two men that were sons of Eber. Just got a picture of the genealogy of Shem showing kind of where we're going right here, that main line right there. And there, that's starting with Shem, goes all the way down, gets into our story next week, getting to Abraham, and then Isaac, and Jacob, and then the Israelites from there. Okay, let's kind of finish up chapter 10, verses 21 through 32. These were the sons of Shem according to their families, according to their language, and their lands, according to their nations. Again, just got to keep in mind, this hadn't happened yet, talking about the different languages and stuff. It's just giving the genealogies first. Verse 32, these were the families of the sons of Noah according to their generations and their nations, and from these the nations were divided on the earth after the flood, and specifically, as we'll see, they're divided when God divides them in what we call the scattering of the people after the Tower of Babel. So Shem's descendants, after the scattering, move in every direction, kind of from where they were. They just kind of go everywhere, north, south, east, and west, around Arabia. And you see the map in yellow, which is right there. So kind of, and I got, probably, I wonder if you can see that. You can't see it very well. But kind of up from the Persian Gulf, north and west of there, where Shinar is, that's kind of where our story is. And on this map, you probably can't read it, but Babylon is close to there, in that place there. But this is where it kind of, so when we talk about them moving north and east and all this, they're kind of from this area. North of that, kind of in the upper part there of the map, is where the ark landed, and they started moving their way down through the Tigris and the Euphrates, and they ended up in the plain or the land of Shinar, and that's kind of where we're talking about when the scattering of the people took place. That's kind of where they're moving out from. And here's some of the nations that were descendants of Shem. A lot of these we very, you know, well-known nations that we study specifically in the Old Testament. The Assyrians, the Elamites, the Chaldeans, the kingdom of Lydia, the Arameans, which are the Syrian tribes, Arabian tribes. Eventually you have the Israelites, of course, coming from there. We already discussed that, coming through Abraham and his sons. The Edomites, the Moabites, and the Ammonites. So a lot of nations in there. But what we're getting into in chapter 11 is we had one nation, and they wanted to stay one nation, and that's a problem with God and the plan that he has that we'll get to a little bit later. But at this time that we're getting into chapter 11, one language, one people, kind of one area. Okay, do you have any comments or questions on the descendants or something maybe that I left out that's important to the story that somebody would like to bring up at this point on the descendants of Noah's sons?
David Muska made a comment or statement one time at the beginning. The first reference we have to the kingdom was in verse 10, the beginning of Nimrod's kingdom, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And if you remember back when we read that, yeah, we're not told much about anything, but Nimrod seems to be somebody that really was all about kind of building and expanding. All right. Getting into the story that we refer to as the Tower of Babel and the scattering of the people, going back to chapter 10 that we just talked about, kind of tells us where mankind settled. You got Noah's descendants had moved south eastward from Mount Ararat to eventually to the land of Shinar, or the plain of Shinar. That's getting into the first couple of verses of 2, but what we've been discussing here after the flood. And the whole earth, it said, says in verse 1, had one language or speech and one family or dwelling. They were trying to kind of stay and just, you know, as we'll get into it, make a name for themselves. Chapter 11, as we get into the meat of chapter 11 in this story, the first half of the chapter, the Tower of Babel, tells us why they were scattered by God, the attitudes that are brought up when we get into the actual story. We'll see why God decides to do the scattering. just on this map here, you can kind of see, follow down the Tigris and the Euphrates and start heading down towards the Persian Gulf. We had this on some other maps in our first several classes as well, but this is about where we have circled there, is about where the plain of Shinar is. So let's get into the verses in chapter 11. Starting with verse 1, it says, "Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly.' They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar." In verse 4, "And they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.'" So this is very interesting, what's recorded here to me. Number one, I kind of put it in blue to stand out from kind of yellow. It's kind of showing what they said they wanted to do, but I really wanted that word "ourselves" to be in there. There seems to be no really thought of seeking counsel or God in what they were doing. It was really kind of, I think the point that's being made is the self-servingness and the ambition that they had right there. As there's a little bit of haughtiness and spirit here, I think that we can get that God's going to talk about as we move forward. But it's interesting, at the end of verse 4, we know this story and we know what is going to happen, but they say, "Let us do these things lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the earth." That's kind of interesting, being that because they did what they did, they're about to immediately be scattered all over the face of the earth. So we'll get into man's plan here next and how it doesn't work out. Their plan: build a great city, they said. Build a tall tower whose top reaches into the heavens. So they wanted something just beautiful that can be seen from far away, kind of look at me, look what we are able to do. They wanted to make a great name or reputation for themselves. And this is a big problem here too. They wanted to stay together, and they don't want to be scattered. But if we look back, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but if we look back a little bit of what God had said that we just studied last week, he'd already told them to be fruitful and multiply and scatter and fill the earth. But that's not in their plan right now. This is their plan kind of here as they speak it out loud. So man's plans can sometimes be selfish and foolish and without any regard to maybe what God wanted us to do. So there's a lesson in this for us right there, that we need to seek God's counsel when we're looking for what direction are we going in life, and should we do this or should we do that. You know, we need to regard what God's plans is before we start jumping in to what we want to do. This is a verse that Wayne had in here from when he taught this before, a pretty good one, just to let us kind of think about the pride that's being shown right here. In Mark 7, 22 and 23, it says, "Thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness," all these evil things, including pride that's in bold there, kind of what they seem to have a little bit of in the story of the Tower of Babel. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. So these things, what had just happened? What did we just get through studying, you know, Wednesday? What happened? What did God do because of this sort of thing? Because of pride and what men do? What just happened? Sorry, what? Yeah, and before that, going back, what did God just do to mankind? Because he had every evil intent in his heart. We just got through the story of the destruction of all mankind, saving just, you know, 8 souls, and then the animals that God decided to replenish later. But the whole earth had just got destroyed for kind of these same things. So there's lessons here for us. I mean, you say, "Oh, I'm not Noah, and he was, you know, it's 900 years, or he lived 900 years, and I can't really relate to that right here." What you can relate to is making plans without regard to God, and that's what we can get out of this right here, and how God looks at man when man kind of stands up and is kind of boastful and like, "Look at me and look what all I've accomplished and look at these great plans I have." When you leave him out, does not make him happy. Any comments or questions before we move on?
Right, he sets precedent of this is what
Thank you. Anybody else? So to that point, you know, how thankful we should be that God gave us these examples, that we actually can go to Scripture, know God's mind, know what God wants for us, know what path we should be on, so that we can learn from these mistakes of other people. Because man is not perfect, but we can learn if we'll study and avoid pitfalls. So getting into verse 5 and 6, a visitor comes to see the city. Verse 5, chapter 11, but the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they shall have one language. And this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. So God sees an issue here with kind of the pride and the speech and the ideas that man has right here when they're all together in that one place with one language. Down in verse 7, God says, come, let us go down there and confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. That's getting back to what we were studying in chapter 10 just a few minutes ago. So they start in this little tiny area. We'll talk a little bit, some speculation about how many people, we don't really know. But they start in this area, one language, one people. And God said, it's not going this way. That's not my plan. And so he gets his plan going and scatters them all over the earth. So God's plan's achieved, and man's selfish ambition is thwarted. God takes action to fulfill his purpose for man. Again, we brought this up a minute ago. Recall what God commanded in Genesis chapter 9. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Can't fill the earth in one spot. Earth is a big place. They were trying to stay together. God confuses their language. God scatters the people throughout the earth. The building is stopped. These great things that man says, look at me and what reputation we're going to have. God stops it and causes man to stop and move on. Thus, God fulfills his purpose for man, and he restrains man's selfish ambitions, which lead to disobedience. That's really the idea. That gets back to that thought of every evil intent. When you got everybody there speaking the same language, the same thing, thinking they can do no wrong, not regarding God, it's led them, you know, before this to destruction. And so God's like, that's not my plan. This isn't going to happen. And he uses his great power and puts his plan into action. Okay, any comments on that story through this point right here? Tower of Babel. So we need to look at all these examples. We have the New Testament now that we can lean on with verses like that were just read that tells us we ought to have an attitude of, if the Lord wills, I'm going to do this, not being haughty, not being arrogant. And at the same time, when we're told to do something, it wasn't just a haughtiness of spirit. I guess it wasn't all about building and doing this right here. No, they'd been commanded to populate the earth. That's not what they want to do. What they want to do is stay together and stay in one place. So have several different things going on. But these are all lessons for us today. You know, it's not necessarily applying exactly what was happening to them, but to us, we have to regard God and his will when we make decisions on what we're going to do with our lives to please him and not to please ourselves. don't know. Anybody else? Okay, let's see if we can get a little bit further on this right here, and then whatever I don't get to, we'll finish. We're getting into Abram Wednesday night. So, generations of Shem. The passage states that the Tower of Babel occurred sometime in the life of Peleg, between 101 years and 239 years after the flood. It's not speculation, the duration when it happens, but it would be speculation to say it happened at this year or this year. But we know just based on the following verses in there, you can just add, it says Arphaxad was born 2 years after the flood, then 35 years later, you know, he has a son, 30 years later, he has a son, 34 years later, it's Peleg. So about 101 years after the flood is when Peleg comes in there. We're given how long he lives. It says in his life the division happens. So we don't know the year. If it was important, God would have said it was in the year, exactly whatever. Obviously, that's not important to the story, but we know about when it happens. That has led some people to speculate, and I say speculate because we don't have any clue, but I was reading through Mr. Waldron's book, and he said that people had guessed, and I think they were saying 100 years or so after the flood. This could have happened 200 years after the flood based on what I just showed you. We don't really know the exact year, but during that life of Peleg, they were saying there could be about 30,000 or more people that were in Babel at this time. Don't know, but, you know, they're growing, and population is increasing from the 8 souls that made it off the ark to several thousands by now. But they're staying in one place at this time. So quickly after Peleg, you have Reu, and then Serug, and then Nahor, which is the grandfather of Abram. And then notice how the lifespan of man from Seth down to Abram, looking at these right here. Hope y'all can see some of that. But look how the years greatly in Peleg, 239 years old. Look above and below him. They start getting closer to the lifespans we have today. We're not quite there yet. We'll be getting there in the Old Testament eventually here. You got people living 900 years old to now when we get to Abram, he only lives 175 years. Still like double our lifespan today, but just kind of interesting. So Peleg begat Reu, Reu begat Serug, Serug begat Nahor. And then Wednesday we'll get into Terah and his descendants. He has sons Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And that's, if you will, read Genesis 11, 27 through 12, 9. We'll be going over those verses and some background content. Just lessons from that. Failings at Babel, man's selfish ambition, and man did not obey God's order to be fruitful and multiply the earth. I think that's all we have time for today, so I'll just stop there. Thanks for your attention.